From olderandwiser.com, it's the Baby Boomer News of the Week. I'm Bob Bates.
And I'm Susan Sikora. This week, the Huffington Post says they'll only cover the Trump campaign as entertainment, not politics.
Bill Cosby loses supporters and could lose his Presidential Medal of Freedom Award.
Plus, we'll talk about the good old days of air travel and why so many baby boomers are getting divorced.
That and more coming up on Baby Boomer News of the Week. Well, this week we're talking once again about Donald Trump.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. But Huffington Post is a news organization, and they did something pretty bold this week. They posted an item that said, after watching and listening to Donald Trump since he announced his candidacy for president, we've decided we won't report on Trump's campaign as part of Huffington Post's political coverage. Instead, we will cover his campaign as part of our entertainment section. Wow. I thought that was, from a news organization, that is some pretty bold stuff.
It is bold, but you know what? Let's face it. It doesn't really matter where they put it, because if you want news about Donald Trump, and people are craving it on both sides of the aisle, because, as I said, he's a floor show, they're going to find it.
But it doesn't matter. But don't they have an obligation as a news organization to acknowledge his 18% of the polls? I mean, I don't see how they can...
Sure they do. Yeah, I think this is a nice bold stand.
They may not
like
him.
Somebody's going to say, maybe we shouldn't have done that after all behind closed doors, because he's out there. And if he, you know, if he flames and burns out, that's one thing on his own. But if they don't cover it, other people will, and they just won't be there. Plus, let's face it, how many places can you get news anymore?
Well,
so if you don't get it from one place, you'll get it from the other.
Exactly. But the Huffington Post, it's a big news source for people today. And they consider themselves a reputable news organization. So honestly, I don't, you know, while I agree that Donald Trump is a big clown in the mix and is really throwing a monkey wrench into the whole process, frankly, it does become a part of the political story.
Mm-hmm.
How do you not cover that?
No, I agree. I think they're going to have to go back to... I mean, it doesn't matter. Maybe they're going to put him back on the front page and hope that nobody remembered that they said they were going to put him on, you know, the entertainment section. Or maybe they'll put him on the front page of the entertainment section.
Yeah,
I don't know.
They're going to have to backtrack on that.
You know, people will find the news about Trump if they want it, and you'll hear it. You can't avoid it, frankly.
Yeah, it was their way of saying... we hate this guy.
Yeah, well, okay. Then if you want to say that, say it in an editorial and move on.
There
but
you
still got to cover what's going on. You don't get to say, well, I don't like this, so I'm not going to cover it. That's not news. That's editorial.
And to top everything off, Donald Trump flippantly belittled Senator John McCain's war service. He did this yesterday. He said, he's not a war hero. He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people who weren't captured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is the guy who's going to go out and lead us with the... He's got so much what you'd call drop-dead money. He could really tell anybody, go drop-dead because I don't need you.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to raise money, I'm sure, because he's got gobs of it.
Yeah.
And so he does what he wants. But if you're going to be the leader of the free world and occupy the White House and lead us forward, which I doubt he'll ever do...
No.
You can't just do what you want.
I will say it's pretty impressive that he has an 18%... approval in the polls. I mean,
you know what I think is interesting?
Who are the people?
Though?
Are those crazies? Some people are calling them crazy.
Not necessarily, because people have, I mean, he's all over the talk shows and everything on the weekend, and that's no surprise.
Yeah.
And he's saying things that some people want to hear.
Well, that's what I think is it.
Speaks plain language.
He does.
And he talks plainly, even though he's got a ton of money and he's educated and all that. And you know whose game I think he unearthed? And I haven't really heard this, but I still suspect that the media folks who manage all this stuff or micromanage it behind the scenes are probably saying, I think he's taken a little of the steam out of Chris Christie. Because Bernie Sanders is going to say what he says, and he's plain talking, and he's on the other side.
Well, Chris Christie is one of those guys who says what he thinks.
That's right, and so does Donald
But you
Trump,
know what? Chris Christie is a politician, and he's had to answer to voters, whereas Donald Trump hasn't. He feels
to no one.
He is so arrogant, and so he can say or do whatever he wants within his own company.
Mm-hmm.
So he feels this autonomy. He feels that he doesn't have to weigh his words or be at all political or even delicate.
But if he were ever to be the president, he would have to answer to people.
That's exactly right. He would have to answer to Congress.
He would have to talk with handlers, with advisors.
He's like a bull in a china shop. And we realize, I think even the crazies realize that. You can't, a president has to have some a diplomatic capability. And it does seem like Donald Trump has none of that.
Well, yeah. And plus, you know, I mean, there's no question. I mean, whether you agree, disagree, voted for, didn't vote for John McCain, he was a war hero. And, you know, I mean, there's just nothing to be said about that. And why would you say anything so inflammatory about this man?
I mean, it just turns Republicans away from you when you need them.
Sure. They don't know what to do about him, I'm sure. What can they do? He's got money. And he gets the spotlight. What did I say about him in the beginning?
Yeah. Well, remember Ross Perot? He was the same way. He would just say crazy stuff that would make headlines. And some of it felt premeditated. And I sometimes wonder if Donald Trump thinks about this in advance and says, I'm going to say this and see what they do. Or if it just spurts out of his mouth. I have a tendency to believe it just sort of tumbles out of his mouth and he isn't really in charge of it.
You know, I'm not sure, and I'm not going to give it much thought.
Okay, on that note, let's move on to Bill Cosby. The details of a deposition have been coming out a little bit at a time, in which he admitted that he had given them drugs.
Sedatives, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, of course, he isn't telling the whole story. He suggests that he could tell by their nonverbal cues that they were giving him the thumbs up and that he could move forward. I don't know. This is a sad, sad story.
This breaks my heart, because I have to tell you, as a boomer, and I remember the days when, I think it was in the 80s, when literally the Cosby Show did change the way people looked at an African-American family.
Sure.
He had, these kids were affluent but not spoiled. They were disciplined but not beaten. They were, it seemed like he and his wife had a great marriage. They loved each other. They were really good parents. They had just the right balance. I mean, it was almost unbelievable, and yet there was a believability about it and an appeal. And I think he appealed to many people across.
Well, and his appeal really goes back way farther than the Cosby Show. Although to today's young people, that's all they really remember. But when I was in college, you know, Bill Cosby used to record. Well, he used to do stand-up shows, of course, like Steve Martin and all the other. And they would record them onto albums, you know, vinyl albums. And in college, we would play the albums and memorize the jokes and.
He was funny.
Funny.
The man
funny,
was funny.
Funny. Great storyteller.
So it's sad, but I don't know. I don't know what he does to make it up. This Medal of Freedom about giving it back. I mean, maybe he could offer it, because I think the president is in a funny spot. He said there's no real formal process, I believe they said, as to
here's the story on that.
Back.
In July of 2002. George W. Bush gave Bill Cosby the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is the nation's highest civilian honor. Of course, at that time, you know, Bill Cosby was revered by America.
Sure.
Now there's a victims group that wants really to have that thing taken back. I don't think that's a possibility. I don't think you can take somebody's award away from them. But does it put George W. Bush in any sort of position to take a position on this? Because obviously he can't do anything.
He's not the president right now, so it would be probably up to President Obama or whoever's president next.
This organization has written to George W. Bush and has asked him to make a recommendation that they revoke the medal. Mm-hmm. They've essentially said in a letter that they understand that there was no way that he would have known at the time that this medal was presented to Mr. Cosby.
That President Bush would have known.
Yeah. But then they said, had you known then what you know now, I'm certain you'd never have allowed Mr. Cosby to receive
this. You know what I think should happen here? If anything happens with the Medal of Freedom, I think the only thing that would probably be effective would be simple for everybody, not put anybody else in a funny position, is because, as you said, George W. Bush, when he was president, certainly didn't know all of this.
Sure.
Bill Cosby did.
Bill Cosby
and
did.
And Bill Cosby should say,
interesting,
I'm going to offer this back.
Yeah.
And then it's over.
Bill Cosby really is the person we're all waiting for to do something.
Yeah.
To make some statement, to take some action. I'm assuming that his attorneys are telling him, you can't do anything. You got to just keep your mouth shut.
That may be. You know, and the bigger question, of course, is what does he do to make it up to all these women that were taken advantage of?
You know, and he's losing supporters left and right. The few that he had left, Whoopi Goldberg has even sort of fallen off the bandwagon. She did something on The View the other day in which she talked to Dan Abrams, a legal analyst, about innocent until proven guilty.
Right. I agree with
Dan
that.
Abrams basically said he can't be proven guilty because of a technicality in the law that doesn't allow any sort of court case to be brought against him after all this time. So you'll never get to the proven guilty thing. So if you've taken that off the table, the proven guilty thing, does that mean he's innocent? Of course it doesn't. And no. Whoopi finally said, oh, I guess you're right. He'll never be proven guilty. So that doesn't mean he's innocent. And it does look very bad. Like, he,
you know,
probably
what the ultimate thing for him might be to do is to maybe offer some kind of payment to all these women who were victimized. And then maybe just go off and be quiet. Go retire. And that might be the ultimate punishment for him, in a sense, because he likes being involved in doing things. You know, he likes being an educator or being interested in education. He likes being an entertainer. He likes to keep his hand in. He's 78 and he's still out there.
It does make you wonder if he is ashamed or if he is in denial.
Yeah, could be.
What do you think?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if he's in denial. Or he just thought maybe he was entitled. I have no idea.
What about his wife, Camille?
My heart breaks for her the most.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure she knew nothing about this.
Of course she didn't. And yet he's revealing in his deposition that he's revealing now in admitting that he hid all this from his wife.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard.
So what does Camille do at this point?
I don't know. I think she's got the roughest road ahead of her, maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, an item came out this week. Here's the headline. It's kind of scary for us all. Why 8 million baby boomers are struggling to pay for food. It was a survey from Feeding America and the AARP Foundation. And it revealed that more than 8 million Americans age 50 through 64 rely on food assistance to make ends meet. I guess that's food stamps. More than 58% of them have unpaid medical bills.
Mm-hmm.
And of the older population served by Feeding America, 13 million Americans older than 50, 63% find themselves having to choose between buying food or paying for medical care. 63%.
It's scary. This is scary. And you want to know something?
That's very scary. Yeah.
There's one thing that I didn't see in this piece. And to be honest with you, I think it's important, is that when you are over 50, if you have lost a job, whether it's due to the economy, whether it's due to the business you're in being replaced by technology, or whether you're just being replaced by somebody younger for one reason or another, if you lose a job in your 50s and 60s, it's very difficult to get another. If you start something,
yes.
If you come
it's
up with a great idea, that's
true.
Different. But most people are not going to do that. And if you get hit with a job loss and illness at the same time, if there's a heart disease or cancer or something, or you have to take care of aging parents,
mm-hmm.
or you have your kids home. There's too many things happening
too
here.
Too many things. All it
there's
takes is one stumble
on
and you're ruined. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. It is too bad that there are so many people over 50, over 60, who have many, many skills and are capable of doing a lot, mm-hmm. and are often sidelined, wasting their talents because they're unable to find a good place to relocate.
Right. And not only that, you said something about being used to being hopping from one thing to another if you do freelance, but the question is, can you find somebody to give you the money to do what you want to do or do what you're good at?
It's tricky. It certainly is tricky.
That is tricky.
Okay, so next up we've got an item that may be well connected to the one we've just talked about. And the headline here is baby boomers getting divorced at alarming rates.
Mm.
Maybe you got no money, you got no love.
Well, you know, they say also that, let's face it, it's no secret that many marriages break up
over money.
The biggest reason is over money.
Money is the number one thing people
argue
about.
What did you make? What did I make? How did you spend it? Did you, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
And at the point where you're in your 60s and the boomers are there, guess what? It's a little late in the game because of what we just talked about to make that up.
It's also possible that the stigma attached to getting divorced is not quite what it was when we were kids.
Say that again.
The stigma attached to getting a divorce is less than it once was. And some believe that that may be one reason why more couples are seeking a divorce later in life. Also, by the time you're 50, 60, sometimes the kids are kind of taken care of. And if you stay together for the kids, you've accomplished your goal. You're done. Mm-hmm. Time to move on. You know.
Plus the fact, look, people who got married in their I think young people, millennials, they're getting married later, and I think that's really a good thing.
Yeah.
I look at my niece; she got married in her 30s. You know, when I got married, I was 25. My mother got married when she was, I think, just 20 or 21. Mm-hmm. So the age.
Well, listen, with life expectancy the way it is, you better think about having a little more time before you get married, because you're going to.
On the other hand, these folks are not, and we've talked about this too, the millennials, if they don't get married early enough to, and if they don't decide to buy a house and have children, then you don't have that social security and that tax income, all those people working and doing all of that, that's still got to generate the income tax in there.
That's true. And of course, you better start saving nowadays as soon as you start your first job. Because I didn't. I don't know if you did, but I certainly didn't.
Well, I did a little here and there, and then things came up. And,
you used it to buy the car.
You think, that time's a long way off. Everybody does that.
Everybody looks off at retirement as though it's a long, long ways off. One out of four people going through a divorce in the U.S. over the age of 50. Isn't that interesting?
Well, not only that, but going back to the young age, if you got married younger and you're in your 60s now and you got married in your 20s, then you've been married maybe 35, 40 years or something like that, maybe even more. Mm-hmm. And most people are not the same people they were when they were 20, I would hope, because they've lived, they've learned, they've got more wisdom, they know how to apply it, maybe they've raised families, they've done a number of things, and life happens, and so you have a little more wisdom. I remember one time when I said to my husband, I think we're the only people that are married longer than us now of our circle of people is your parents, or my parents.
Interesting. You know? So, divorce is tough for everybody, especially for kids, and it's not a pretty business. But gosh, so many people do it. I think overall nationally, I think it's 50% of marriages do ultimately end in divorce. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Well, I think people need to wait a little longer. They do need to wait a little longer before they get married. I think sometimes. Do you know somebody really well? And have the conversations about the hard stuff. You know, nobody wants to bring things up like, do you want kids or how many kids? And what if I don't want as many kids as you want? And where do you want to live? And do you want to rent?
You better figure that stuff out. Yeah, people don't really.
Those are the nuts and bolts conversations, not, you're so cute. And what color should we put the bridesmaids in?
And it's just time to get married. People often get married just because it's time. I haven't found anybody else yet. My friends are all getting married. I better get married.
I don't know. Is that true for younger people these days?
I think so.
I think it was true for boomers, because I was one of the last of my crowd to get married, and I was 25. So that's all
35.
The others.
I was 35. Yeah. It helps to wait. You really should wait.
You're more of a grown up. You know more of what you want. You've maybe done your, gotten into your career, gotten it started. Know if that choice was good or not. Paid off a college loan if you have it. All those things make a huge difference.
Came across an interesting pictorial in Business Insider. From businessinsider.com, it was, it wasn't much of a story. It was just 23 vintage photos from the glory days of aviation. Now, I know this doesn't sound like much, but I was sort of captivated by these pictures. They're all black and white pictures of people on airplanes in the old days. And gosh, it was a nice experience back then.
Yeah. Well, first of all, if you look at these pictures, and I'm looking at some of them now, too, they're black and white photos. Mm-hmm. But look at the way the people are dressed.
When I was a kid, my first airplane flight really was when I was 13 years old. My dad took me to Washington, D.C. And my mom said, okay, you have to look good. You can't wear those on the plane. You've got to put nice slacks on and good shoes and a nice shirt. You know, I was like, okay, because that's what people did back then. They dressed up. It was a
passengers in the even in the color shots now. I'm looking too, but the passengers in these, the men are all wearing ties and jackets.
Yeah, yeah.
When was the last time you saw that? Unless somebody came right from a business meeting.
Some people get on planes today. To me, I'm always sort of surprised the way they roll onto planes in flip flops and pajama bottoms and tank tops. I'm thinking, you're in it. What if something goes wrong? You're not even going to be dressed appropriately to manage it. You don't even have shoes on to climb out of the burning plane with. You know, it's kind of like but I also dress, even to this day when I travel, I put on good shoes. I wear at least black jeans. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes wear a jacket. And the reason is because if something goes wrong, and you need to rebook a flight, or you need to get some accommodation from a flight attendant or a desk person or something, it's been my experience that if you are a business traveler and you look to be a business traveler, you get better response from the airline.
I agree.
I'm just saying.
They'll treat you, you know, it's like they say, dress for the job you want. Well, dress for the response you want.
Exactly.
From somebody too.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's a good point.
Yeah. People are eating like crazy on these planes, too.
Yeah, really?
In this first picture, there's a shot of two dressed-up people seated in their lovely airplane seats, and there's a flight attendant and a chef, and they are cutting ham off of a full ham and serving them as though it's a restaurant. I guess they used to do that in the old days.
In that picture, it looks like it looks like Colbin's mustard, which I think is a little more upscale than, you know, it ain't French's.
They also remind us that people used to smoke on planes.
Oh, gosh.
And honestly, it hasn't been that long ago. Do you remember being on flights when there was a smoking section?
I do.
It was really awful. Liquor was served freely. Pillows. Everybody could have a pillow if you wanted it. Oh, my gosh. Air travel used to be pretty fun.
Yeah. Now, if you want any of that, you're in first class and you're paying a lot more for it, I'm sure. I think. I don't know.
Even the first class experience has been degraded considerably since the old days. On certain airlines in particular, even your leg room in first class is not all that impressive.
That's true.
Yeah. It's just like a reasonable coach seat used to be. If you could go anywhere right now, where would you go?
Oh, golly. I don't know. I'd probably go take a nap in the next room.
Oh, please. No. I mean, an airplane ticket. Where would if I could give you an airplane ticket, somewhere would you want to go right now?
Boy. Either Italy or Hawaii.
Hawaii for me. I'd be gone in a minute.
It was beautiful. Yeah.
Speaking of fun, this was fun, Susan Sikora, once again.
Always good to be with you, Bob Bates.
And we'll see you next time. Check us out at olderandwiser.com.